Louise McSharry. Weekends from 9 on 2FM.
Well, parenting is for life, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, no doubt about that. And with schools and workplaces going remote to prevent the spread of COVID-19, parents everywhere are struggling to keep everything going and children healthy and occupied. And I know if you were listening yesterday morning, I talked about this. I'm personally finding it very challenging. And I spoke about this on my Instagram stories during the week about the feeling of kind of like you're failing at everything. You're not doing anything properly. And, you know, your kids are upset and you're upset and it's all really tricky. So with this in mind, we are joined by Joanna Fortune, psychotherapist and author of 15 Minute Parenting, The Quick and Easy Way to Connect with Your Child. And Joanna, I don't think people have ever been more desperate to hear some professional advice than they are right now.
I know, it's one of those uncharted territories, isn't it? Like just when you thought you had it nailed, this went and landed on your doorstep and everything is up in the air again. So I just think, honestly, I say it all the time, good enough is good enough, but that has never been truer than right now. I think everybody needs to give themselves a break.
Yeah, I think so too. But it is so hard because, you know, we're all worried about loads of different things at the moment. But if you have children, and particularly I think if you have small children who can't really understand this mm-hmm. at all, it's very difficult to manage their emotions.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of added into that is that we're at home now all of the time. And particularly if that isn't the norm in your house, it's very difficult for very young children to hold that kind of duality of roles in mind, that you're there, but you're not available to me. So you're in the kitchen or you're in the office, but I'm supposed to pretend that you're not. That's really difficult for them. So their demand for you, for your time and attention is actually going to go up. But if you add into that, that we know, and this sounds like a guilt thing for parents, and it's not at all, we'll try and positively reframe it. But we know that our children take their emotional and behavioral cues from us, their important adults, you know, their parents, their caregivers. So when we're worried, and we are, let's be honest, you know, all of us are worried about what's going on right now. They're looking at us and going, oh, something is up. You're around a lot more. You seem worried. Mm. Oh, my goodness. Now I'm worried. And because I'm very young, I can't filter out between my feelings and someone else's. So I just get completely overwhelmed with stuff I don't understand, as you said. And my language at that age isn't to sit down and say, hey, listen, I'm overwhelmed and perturbed by the situation we find ourselves in. It's to communicate that in a doing, not saying way. So it's my behavior. That's how I'm telling you things aren't working for me. I'm not okay. I'm not understanding this.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had that with my three-year-old. He's angry. He's just angry all the time, and he's hitting all the time. And the hitting, it's not even like, I don't think it's a malicious thing. I don't think it's that he's trying to hurt. I think it's like a physical release for him or something.
Totally.
Does that make sense? Really, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. And I have one actually, you know, the same age, so I hear you. But like, I do think it's that I need to release. I need to kind of evacuate these icky, uncomfortable, chaotic feelings inside of me. Mm. And, you know, fists and hitting is a very effective way at doing that. So one of the things that I would say just even immediately on that is rather than getting into this power struggle, I mean, you know, at that age, they can go much louder and longer than we can. But rather than getting pulled into the power struggle of stop hitting, don't hit. And they're going, well, I don't know what else to do. So I'm going to shout at you as well as hitting. Mm. Turn the hitting into a structured game. So what you would be doing there is prescribing the behavior. So they want to hit and lash out and throw things. Do you know what we're going to do? We're going to open a bag of cotton balls. Everybody's going to take a handful of them. And on your cue, we're going to have a snowball fight and throw cotton balls at each other. Mm. Because then we do get to lash out at each other, but in a way that's fun, engaging, and isn't going to hurt me or anybody else. Because cotton balls aren't going to hurt us.
Yeah.
But I'm getting to release that tension in the only way I know how to at 3 years old.
Yeah. That's a really good suggestion. I suppose I should start at the beginning of all of this. And I suppose a lot of people are wondering, and people will have made inroads into this already, but what should we be telling our children about what's going on? And I presume that varies from age to age.
I mean, it definitely does. What doesn't vary is that we should be open, honest, and answer the question that they have asked, no matter how old they are. Mm. Because there's no kind of prescriptive way with this, because no 2 3-year-olds are the same, no 2 9-year-olds are the same. And when a child asks you a question, that is their way of saying, I'm ready for the answer to this question. The mistake that we tend to make is as soon as they ask us the question, we take this deep breath and go, okay, brace yourself, here comes the science. And we tend to flood them with a topic worth of information when all they asked was one question. So I think stick with what they've asked. If it's a big question, take a mini pause and say, what a great question. Why don't you tell me what you think the answer is, and I'll let you know what's right and what needs correcting in that. And that way you're getting their baseline of knowledge as well. But for me, I would definitely, they're hearing the words, no matter how old they are, even the very, very little ones, they're hearing terms like corona or corono, as my little one calls it, the corono germs. So, you know, they're hearing it on news bulletins that we're listening to voraciously. And so we've got to put a framework around that. So for me, I open and honest for a young child sounds like there's a thing called the coronavirus, and it's a very special kind of flu, and it's worse than the normal flu. But there are lots of people, doctors and nurses, working really, really hard to find a cure for it and to make sure that as many of us stay well as possible. And what they ask us to do is stay at home and only mix with each other in our family and not anybody else until they work this out. So we're going to help them by staying in. And that's all honest and relatable for a young child. But as soon as you've done that, now you want to redirect them into a doing thing. So now that we are in, let's think of what we could do together, because you want to redirect my focus then to something positive.
Yeah. What would you do? So what about, because I've experienced this, but I have lots of friends who've been saying that their children are doing the same thing. Kids who are waking up in the nighttime, who are having distressing dreams. How do you manage that?
Oh, you know, I've loads of contact from people with exactly that. That does seem to be quite the phenomenon at the moment for young children. And it makes sense, because actually what the purpose of all of our dreams is to help us filter through and process the stimulus of our day. We all do that. What happens in our sleep is the unconscious mind becomes more active and takes over from the conscious thinking and works through all of this unprocessed material. It's no different for children. So what that's telling you is they're going to sleep with unresolved questions, wonderings, and little uh-oh feelings about what's going on around all of this. So one thing I would say, if you're seeing a pattern of that emerge, is try to make sure that you've got a nice, clear, calm bedtime routine. I mean, whatever that looks like in your family now. There, again, you can look at something online and say, God, that sounds amazing. I'd love to live in Mary Poppins' house where that happens. But, you know, whatever it looks and sounds like in your house. But I also am a huge advocate of no screens just before bed, but also making sure that you've got an opportunity for an authentic, good old belly laugh. Not tickles, nothing wrong with tickles between parents and children, but that's a stimulus. A good old laugh, a bit of crack before you go to bed, because a deep belly laugh releases any residual tension that the body is holding on to. And it's just such an effective way at shaking those uh-oh feelings out. Another thing that I like to do is dance the moodies away, but coming up to bedtime. So we put on a song. It could be anything, whatever comes on when you hit play on your Spotify list, you know, from Disney to the Rolling Stones, whatever it is, and just dance. Everybody flailing arms, legs, shaking it out for the duration of that song. Anything goes. And again, rhythm, synchrony, and movement trigger those subsystems of the brain associated with emotional regulation. So that's going to also be very co-regulating before I go into sleep. So I would increase the sensory play as well for all children at this time, no matter how old they are. That is, you know, water play, sand, Play-Doh, baking, music. And by music, I really do mean the pots, pans and plastic or wooden spoons in your drawers. And just do clapping, clicking, stamping. Rhythm and synchrony is your friend with the sensory play right now.
Okay, that's hugely helpful. What about people who are trying to manage homeschooling? I know a lot of people really feeling a lot of pressure on that front.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I mean, I'm not an advocate of homework at the best of times, but now literally the schoolwork has come home with them. And I just think you've got to hold in mind, you are not their teacher. So this is not going to look and feel like a structured school day. I mean, teachers train for a long time to do what they do. So that's why they're way better at it than we are. And what I would say to you is a little bit of structure and to embrace that play is the language of children. If they're playing, they're learning. So don't just say, well, God, they're only out in the garden digging a hole. They're learning loads. They're upturning stones and they're seeing lots of insects and creatures wiggling and moving around. They're discovering that you can, you know, dig a hole, you can fill it in, you can put things in, put it out. It's all about containment and limits. Everything they're playing is about learning. So increase and embrace that. I think as well, build into your day some creative teaching around, teach them a life skill a day or a week, depending on how old they are. You know, don't peak too soon. We don't know how long this is going to go on.
Exactly.
You know, so teach them a little life skill. And that could be about how to properly straighten the duvet on their bed. It could be, you know, this is actually where the laundry goes when you take it off you. It could be this is how to load and unload the dishwasher. It could be whatever, how to clean a counter down, how to sweep the floor, depending on their age. Mm. Teach them a life skill and get them involved in helping. And also at this time, well, normally if I was talking to you, I'd be saying, you know, minimize the screen time. It's going to sabotage play. These are uncharted territory times we're living in. So screens in this way could be used for creative learning. So all of the museums, zoos, national parks have webcams. So if they're on a screen, have them dial in there and see what animals and about wildlife and about the, you know, ecology out there, and have them learn by looking. Have them go to the Hermitage in St. Petersburg without leaving your front room. Mm. Really embrace that stuff and make screen time work for you.
Now, speaking of screen time, people will be relying on screens, and there will be, I know Disney Plus, their timing could not have been better.
So true.
So a lot of people are heavily engaged with Disney Plus now this week and other services and general television. And I think a lot of people are feeling really guilty about that.
I know. And look, at I just think, how, let's restructure that, because the guilt, I'm not going to say don't feel guilty, because I think as soon as you're a parent, there is an inherent, unavoidable level of simmering guilt that we all hold, that we're not somehow enough. But I think, look, if you have a call to do or some work you have to do, and you're saying, look, I need to use the Disney thing or Netflix or YouTube or whatever it is, if you're playing a movie, so that's about 60 to 90 minutes of screen time, which is a lot unbroken for young children. Why don't you make it interesting and draw up a list? Now, household items, a clock, you know, a table, a teddy bear, just loads of things on a list. And the older they are, throw in a few curveballs and make it a bit more challenging. And now you have a movie scavenger hunt. So while they're watching their movie, they have to be mindful to take in details in the scenes and check them off their list. And at the end, you'll come in and check with them and go, okay, what did you find? What did you miss? And then maybe turn it into a director game of, if you were the director of this movie, what would you keep in? What would you cut out? Because as a director, you get to say cut. And what scene would you now put in, and how would that change the ending? All of a sudden, it's not this zoning out use of screen time, but actually it's an engaging and structured use of them. And that means that they're not flipping their lids when you suddenly say, well, that's done because I got my email off, so now we can do something else. Because that's when we tend to see the children become virtually and cognitively overstimulated, and then we whip it away and say, now play. And that's it. But also bear in mind that not all screens are created equal. So a TV on in a family room, a child will watch it for a bit, and then they'll zone out and play a bit on the floor, and then they'll watch a bit more, and they'll come in and out of it.
Yeah.
That's not as overstimulating as sitting watching a tablet on their lap, which is all-consuming, all-absorbing.
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone with a small child could tell you that, yeah, they do. You know, you can talk to them, you can scream their name, and they won't even kind of turn and look at you. I want to ask you as well, because another thing I think people are concerned about is routine. And I know this, depending on your child, this can be absolutely catastrophic, taking your child out of their routine, particularly if you have a child with additional needs. But you know, we all are told from day one, kids love routine, get your routine going. And then that's all being thrown up in the air. And I think a lot of people are worried about what damage that might do to their children, particularly kids who struggle to get into a routine in the first place. And then also about what it will be like trying to transition back into the routine at the end of this. What would you say to those people who are concerned?
Yeah, I mean, children do thrive on routine in one way, but really what they thrive on is what's calm, clear, consistent and predictable. And that is a routine. But don't think it's the one routine you had established. You can establish and should establish, or seek to do so now, a new routine for the, however long this is going to go on for. And that's not going to be exactly like it was doing childcare drop-offs or school drop-offs. You know, you might not need everybody up and fed by 7 a.m. and in the car by 7:30. Mm. Instead, though, you will say as a family, everybody will be up and dressed. Now, that doesn't have to be in your formal wear, but it won't be pajamas by 9 or 9:30. Everybody will have breakfast together. After breakfast, everybody goes to their work corners, depending on the age of your children now. Mm. And they do schoolwork, you do some work. Then there's a mid-morning, you know, juice, snack, chat, play for 15 minutes. And then everybody does a little more work. And then in the afternoon, everybody plays. Or whatever way, you know, that's just a sample. Because if you're co-parenting with somebody in the home with you, then it might be that one of you works in the morning while the other one does play parenting, and then you switch roles in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And what everybody is going to have now is a new routine that's just going to be different, but it will be okay for your children. There'll be an adjustment period as they transition from this isn't what we usually do, but quite quickly, we're already in, what is it, week three of this?
Yeah.
This is going to become a new normal. And then you're absolutely right, Louise, the transition back to the other routine is what's going to be difficult. And at this stage, depending on if we were talking about school, we don't even know if they're going back to school this year. So it could be quite a prolonged gap. So in that instance, when we do know that schools are reopening or creches or whatever it is reopening, begin to reintroduce the old routine, maybe if you have it a week before you actually need to use it.
Right.
So start getting up at the old time, start repeating those structures of the day so that you're easing them into it. But anticipate a wobble when we all go back to that. I think that's only to be expected. And to be fair to children, we're throwing a lot at them as well.
Mm.
So I think if we anticipate, look, when we get back into fresh, we could have a couple of weeks where this is tricky and the point of separation is difficult again and just getting us back into sync is difficult. But that shouldn't last, you know, in terms of like almost like a muscle memory, to use that analogy.
Yeah.
It should be that this is familiar to them and they will default back to it once it becomes, again, the new normal. I would anticipate a couple of weeks, though. That could be very tricky.
Okay. I've got two quick questions I want to ask you before I let you go. First of all, what if you have kids who are in an exam year?
Oh, super difficult, isn't it? And I think as well the changes with the oral. So I work a lot with teenagers and I'm in touch with a few of them about this. I think all you can do is don't see yourself as their teacher. See yourself as their study buddy. What does your child need to keep studying, because they have to keep going like they're doing the exams as planned. We don't know how or what that will look like, but we assume exams will go ahead. So it might be that you say to them, look, I'm going to sit in the room and there'll be no other distractions, and I'm going to time you while you do a past paper, and we'll pretend it's like the real exam. Then we can talk about what was easy and what was difficult at the end. You know, get them to give you a list of their favorite snacks that help them study and provide a few of those to them. Try to facilitate quiet study time for them as best you can if you've got younger children, but also draw them in and let them know that, you know, you get it, that it's hard, and it's hard for you too. Ask them what you can do to help them, and then give them a couple of things that they can do to help you. Mm. Really treat them as collaborators with you on this. And I think it's working with them that'll stop you having to work against them.
Okay. And finally, this is for the people who have small children who require / want attention constantly. How do you find room for you to take a break in the midst of all of that? Say there will be people who are on their own with children, one parent at home with young children on their own.
And let's not pull any punches. Those people have it a lot tougher than those who have a partner living with them to co-parent with. It is constantly being on. So one of the things that, you know, one of the things actually I've done it myself with my own friend group is that we set a time, an evening, we're currently redoing it now on Zoom, and everybody's dialing in from wherever they are. And after bedtime, cup of tea or beverage of your choice, no judgment here, we're all just having a chat, and not saying we won't talk about this stuff that's going on and how it's affecting us, because that's unrealistic, but certainly saying we won't only talk about that. And then it's about that connection. It's about getting out of our heads and back into the now moment. We keep thinking about our kids not having access to their little peers. We need access to our adult peers as well. That is our reprieve and our break from the day. I also think that if you can get a little bit of time in your day, whatever that looks like, to move, get into, if you've a garden, fantastic. If you've access to an open, safe, you know, socially distancing, adhering space, use that. But get moving. And it's not about this, you know, get out running and exercise or anything like, you know, if that works for you, fab. But I don't mean that. I just mean move, dance, sing, walk. Just get outside, open a window, take some breath. The other thing, Louise, that's really quick, simple way of resetting the brain when you're getting overwhelmed and frazzled is to change the field of vision. And what that means in these times we live in is to look out a window. And while looking out that window, name 5 things you can see, 4 things you can hear, 3 things you could touch, 2 things you could smell, 1 thing you could taste, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, engaging your senses. While looking out a window is a grounding exercise. It's very quick and it's very effective.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Joanna Fortune, psychotherapist and author of 15-Minute Parenting, The Quick and Easy Way to Connect with Your Child. I really appreciate your help this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Louise.
Louise McSherry. Weekends from 9 on 2FM.